What's up, everyone? Welcome back to Destination Healthcare Season 2, Episode 2. Today's episode is sponsored by a good friend of mine, Dr. Josie, or at Write Your Acceptance on Instagram. She is a PhD and a writing faculty at the University of Miami with 10 years of experience working with students on medical, dental, and residency personal statements. She is the personal statement coach. She goes way beyond commas and grammar. She helps students build their essays and craft their most compelling message. So save time and effort knowing you're working on your best personal statement with Dr. Josie. She has a new product out right now. For those of you that are writing your secondary essays for medical school, check out her Why Us template, which will help fast track your secondaries. So my advice for you, if you're working on your personal statement or your secondaries, DM Dr. Josie on Instagram. Tell her that I sent you. Her Instagram handle is at Write Your Acceptance. That's right, like W-R-I-T-E, Your Acceptance. Tell her I sent you. What's up, guys? Welcome back to Season 2, Episode 2 of Destination Healthcare, the podcast to learn about your favorite healthcare professionals. They will be sharing with you their advice, insight, and the lessons that they learned along the journey. Our guest today is Chrissy Massaro, a certified registered nurse anesthetist, CRNA. That's what I'll be saying for the rest of this episode, guys, CRNA. Chrissy is based in Philadelphia. Philly, represent. You know I'm all about Philly. She works in a large academic medical center and gives anesthesia for a wide variety of surgeries and patient populations. Prior to becoming a nurse anesthetist, she worked as a critical care nurse in the heart and vascular intensive care unit. Chrissy also has a prior degree in psychology with minors in biology and Spanish, which fostered her passion for health and wellness. Her favorite hobby is creating vegan recipes and sharing them on her Instagram page and food blog. She can be found on TikTok and Instagram at Chrissy CRNA. Welcome to the podcast, Chrissy.
Thanks so much for having me, Jake.
You're welcome. I've been wanting to meet you for a long time, and we first met on TikTok, and like I was just telling you before the episode, you can really see who's real on TikTok and who's not. And you are so real. You post real, vulnerable content that really shows another side of medicine, that it's not just you have to be a doctor. There are so many professions and specialties out there. So I just want to thank you for doing everything that you do on that app.
Oh, thanks so much. I enjoy your content too.
Thank you. All right, so let's get into it, because you're a CRNA, and I want to know, first off, your background, where you grew up, and what got you interested in medicine.
So I grew up on Long Island. My family still lives there. And I think I became interested in medicine early in life. I had an older sister who was born with Turner syndrome and autism. And what's interesting about Turner syndrome is it's a chromosomal anomaly that some people are born with, similar to how you might be more familiar with Down syndrome. Basically, what happens in Turner syndrome is you're female by default because you're missing the second chromosome on the pair that determines gender. So instead of XX or XY, it's just X. And about 5% of girls with Turner syndrome are born with a congenital heart defect, which my sister was. And so in her case, it was coarctation of the aorta, meaning the aorta was pinched shut when she was born. And they didn't identify it until she went home from the hospital about 2 weeks later. She went into heart failure and turned blue because the vessel that in fetal circulation allows blood to go, basically when a baby is in utero, the blood flow is different than in a normal adult or child's heart. So when that little vessel, the PDA, patent ductus arteriosus, closed off, which it always does around 2 weeks of life, she went into total heart failure. So she, grew up with just having to go to the cardiologist every year, a specialty pediatric endocrinologist in New York City, who specialized in her condition. And it was, there was a lot of going back and forth to doctors. And I remember they used to, the cardiologist was so nice. They would always have us like be there for the echoes, like looking at the images, and they would like explain it to me, even though I was a young child and had no idea what I was looking at. And it was like almost a fun experience, getting to be like part of her care and just being in that atmosphere. And lots of interesting, complicated things. My parents had to give her growth hormone injections every night. So just growing up around medical equipment and going back and forth to all these things just made me very comfortable in medicine.
Right.
So I just always like kind of knew that I would grow up to do that one day. Actually, I thought I was going to be a cardiologist.
Really? So was anyone in your family in medicine, or did you?
No, okay, no. My parents had to learn everything from encyclopedias and library books because there was no internet either at the time.
Wow. As far as treating your sister with like hormone injections and everything, they were learning everything.
Yeah. I mean, of course the doctor would send them home with instructions, but we had stacks and stacks of medical textbooks at my house.
Wow.
And when something funny would happen, my mom would say, like, let's pull out the medical textbooks. And like, we had like five of them. Like, you're the medical textbook. And then we'd call the doctor. So
wow.
It was interesting.
So you really were exposed from a young age, but you said you were considering cardiology. So when did you decide CRNA? And sort of in the same question, what was your college experience like? And did you decide during that time?
So, you know, it's kind of funny. My parents actually at the time were extremely religious, like around the time I was in middle school and high school. And they kind of like got on this pathway of like really discouraging me from going to med school, which is what I said I wanted to do. Because they really felt strongly like, oh, like that would take away from your ability to have children as a woman and be a good mother and all those stereotypes that we think happened back in the day, really became very prevalent in, you know, my high school years. Also, you know, concerns about, you know, like what they'd make me do in medical school and residency and not in line with our religion. It was interesting. So, of course that's changed since then. My parents have evolved past that and matured. But, so at the time, like I was very much discouraged from going down that path. So I changed to a social work major. I started out college majoring in social work, thinking like, well, I still want to help people. I still want to like give back to the community. I still want to change the world. I'll just do it in a different way.
Right.
So it was funny because I was taking my basic science classes I had to take, and I just like wanted to take anatomy and physiology. I just did it. I didn't have to take it, but I just did it anyway. And I loved it. I loved my professor. She was a nurse practitioner. She was brilliant. Mm-hmm. And after that, I was like, you know what? That's it. I'm just going to switch to a psych major. I'll keep my credits and then I can do pre-med. So I did a biology minor. I finished a psychology degree. And then I took a study abroad internship in Mexico that allowed me to do a pre-med internship in Mexico. And so in Mexico, I shadowed in various public hospitals. And some of my rotations fell through. I was supposed to go to four hospitals. And then I had a hard stop. My paperwork just like never got there. And I got stuck at this women's hospital for the rest of the semester. Mm-hmm. And the one person who just like went out of her way for students was this anesthesiologist down there at the women's hospital, Dr. Elia Fernandez. And she just took me under her wing. So I spent a disproportionate amount of time in anesthesia.
Wow.
And she would stick me with other doctors too. She'd be like, go see GYN for the day. She'd like, you know, ship me around. But I spent a lot of time doing anesthesia for women's health. Mm-hmm. And I loved it. I was shocked. I thought anesthesia was going to be so boring. I was so disappointed when I found out we were doing anesthesia.
Right.
But it was amazing. I loved it. So I came back to the States and was like, you know, I don't know. I didn't know that CRNAs existed. And I started working at a surgery center as a CNA, a certified nurse's aide.
Okay.
And that's where I got exposed to more anesthesia providers, an anesthesiologist supervising eight nurse anesthetists. They all had their own room and the anesthesiologist was kind of out doing the pre-ops and checking on patients. And so I spent a lot of time with the primary anesthesiologist there. And then he would, on my downtime, like ask the CRNAs if I could shadow them. And then I would like go back and forth. And everyone there just encouraged me to pursue it. And that's when I finished up my degree early. And I entered a 1-year accelerated nursing program so I could get on the CRNA track.
Very
so
cool.
It's kind of crazy.
Yeah. It seems like it was like a serendipitous event that occurred in Mexico that kind of started this. And that's funny. Like so much of life is based on serendipity and the fact that you got, you know, stuck with anesthesia, then, you know, being stuck with anesthesia ended up being one of the best things that ever happened to you.
It was the best mistake of my life, I like to say.
Love
I mean,
that.
If I had gone to medical school in the first place, I don't think I ever would have chosen this as a specialty. Mm-hmm. And it truly is the perfect specialty for me. It really is the best fit. So I'm really glad that, like I said, it's the best mistake I ever made.
Love that. Tell us a little more about, because I think myself included and everyone, a lot of people listening, I'm not going to say everyone, but a lot of people listening may be a little confused about what a CRNA does and what kind of training is, like how many years of training and what kind of degrees do you need to become a CRNA?
Sure. So it's a little confusing because there's a couple answers and they're all right. So I guess I'll start with the training and then I'll say what we do. So in order to become a nurse anesthetist, you need a Bachelor of Science degree in nursing. So it's a 4-year degree. Then you need to have typically 2 years or more of critical care experience, although some schools will accept 1 year, mm-hmm. but usually you have to be like a very special candidate for that, like lots of experience in another related field, for example, or some people were paramedics for many years and then they transitioned to nursing and like someone like that would be a good 1 year candidate.
Okay.
But typically for like somebody who has not been in nursing for very long, they look for the more years in critical care, the better. So the average CRNA has 3 to 5 years of critical care experience before going back to school.
Wow.
So yeah, so these people are experts in critical care is really the basis for anesthesia. So then you go on and it used to be a master's degree in nurse anesthesia, but now the new requirement is for a doctorate degree, which are typically
very cool.
3-year programs. So I was one of the last, I was the last class at the University of Pennsylvania to get a master's degree. And most programs have already switched over. They all will be switched by 2022. So no more master's degrees from now on.
And so it's all going to be doctorate. It's going to be doctorate CRNA.
Yep. Yep. So it'll be a doctorate of nursing practice or a doctor of nurse anesthesia practice. And that is the title of the degree. So the answer to like what nurse anesthetists do, it really varies on where you work, what state you live in, what kind of facility you're in. So technically, nurse anesthetists were the first providers of anesthesia in the US, which is very different than the rest of the world. So, you know, the first incidences of people regularly giving anesthesia were nurses in the Civil War, giving ether or chloroform to wounded soldiers in surgery or on the battlefield. And that was, it was always seen as a nursing duty. In the early days of, you know, when medical schools began training formally, surgeons would be training learners, I guess the early days of resident physicians, and none of them had an interest in the anesthesia. They thought it was boring. They wanted to watch the surgery. So the nurses volunteered to jump in. So that's just kind of historically how the profession evolved. One of the most famous nurse anesthetists, Agnes McGee, she gave all the anesthesia exclusively for all the Mayo brothers. So who the Mayo Clinic's named after. Yeah, she gave over 14,000 anesthetics and had zero deaths. So that's kind of the so that's the history of where we come from. And so because of that history, nurse anesthetists can still provide anesthesia independently in the U.S. to this day, which again is very different than most other countries.
Yeah.
So really what happened was physician anesthesia developed almost like a parallel track alongside of it. And the two different educations and have kind of always existed alongside of each other and separate. So the first physician training group was established in 1927 by Ralph Waters, and nurse anesthetists, I believe their first class was in 1919. So it, almost like a little less than a 10 year difference. And ever since they've kind of like always paralleled each other, which is interesting. Now in large academic medical centers, like where I work, and a lot of mid-sized hospitals, we work together as a team. Mm-hmm. So I have a physician anesthesiologist who will oversee what I'm doing as well as nurse anesthetists in several other operating rooms at a time. And that's about Medicare billing rules. But legally, I could also contract out my services to like a dentist mm-hmm. or a plastic surgeon or someone. And I could also legally say, hey, I'll give your anesthesia and I could just bill myself. So I'm also capable of doing it alone. But wow. Typically what you see is in big centers, we usually work together. And that's because anesthesia care for complicated patients is complicated. So.
Right. Wow. I mean, you just pretty much nailed my next 6 questions. That was perfect.
Oh, I'm sorry.
No. This was amazing. You gave a full history of CRNAs. I loved that. That was incredible. I learned so much. So you guys, I didn't know this, but you can administer anesthesia independent of an anesthesiologist?
In fact, in the U.S. U.S. military, it's almost exclusively nurse anesthetist giving anesthesia on the battlefield. So if you're a soldier and you get injured in battle, it's a nurse anesthetist who's doing your emergency life-saving care.
Wow.
There are physician anesthesiologists in the military, but they're not used in usually the MASH units. Oftentimes they're in like military hospitals, like in big cities. Mm-hmm. So the people on the front lines are almost exclusively CRNAs working alone.
Very cool. So there are maybe people listening that want to explore the CRNA route, but maybe they don't know a lot about it. How would one learn more about becoming a CRNA?
That's a great question. So it's always been like the best kept history in medicine, best kept secret in medicine, we always say. Like it's something that is really hard to get information on. And I had a lot of trouble with it actually when I was trying to research it. Now that social media and healthcare blogs and healthcare mm-hmm. platforms are becoming a thing, there are a few like big nurse anesthesia groups out there. But before then, it was almost impossible to find anything. The only internet resource that I can regularly find outside of social media is a website called all-crnaschools.com. Mm-hmm. And they give information on like what different schools require and different program statistics. But other than that, it's like impossible to find stuff.
Wow.
There's a really good Facebook group called i.c.u/dreaming about anesthesia. That's newer, and that's a nurse anesthetist started that Facebook group, and that's a good like support community for people interested in becoming nurse anesthetists.
Can they shadow? Can someone shadow a CRNA?
You can shadow. It's hard to as a high school student. Almost impossible, I'd say, because there's so many like HIPAA laws in the hospital.
For sure.
It's hard to shadow anyone in a hospital as a high school student, unfortunately.
What about college?
In college, it's easier for nursing students. Typically, they all have at least 1 or 2 days in the operating room anyway, shadowing OR nurses.
Okay.
So I would suggest when that's being set up, whoever is setting it up for you, ask them if you can do an extra day with anesthesia. Or when you meet people in the operating room, introduce yourself to the anesthesia team and ask them if, you know, they wouldn't mind. Sometimes your academic advisors can help set it up, but typically with your OR shadowing is like the best time to do that. As a registered nurse who already works in a hospital, I would recommend just emailing your anesthesia department directly. Just find the chief nurse anesthetist or chief physician anesthesiologist and say, hey, I'm a nurse here. I'm interested in anesthesia. You know, is it possible to shadow any of the staff? And usually they'll say yes.
Okay. So another thing I wanted to touch on, and then I want to ask you a couple more questions about you and then get into social media. The salaries for CRNAs, when I first saw that, blew my mind. I saw that the average salary for a CRNA was about $150,000. And
it's actually a little outdated. It's actually closer to $185,000 now.
Wow.
For average salary.
That's incredible.
$185,000? Mm-hmm. Yeah. And well, if you think about it, you're taking on a lot of risk. You have a lot of training. Anesthesia is a really huge responsibility. And that's an average, you know, you're going to get paid a little bit less if you work in an anesthesia care team in a big city that has a saturated market. Like, believe it or not, New York City pays like some of the lowest rates for nurse anesthetists.
Really?
Yeah. Isn't that funny? Because like for nurses, it pays the highest or one of the highest. But,
right.
But it's a saturated market.
Right.
Okay. But if you do rural practice where you're independently working, there's so many community hospitals in rural America that have 2 to 4 nurse anesthetists that cover all of the anesthesia year round.
Wow.
And those people get paid up to $300,000. So you really, you know, but they're providing all the anesthesia care. So of course they do. I would say in most cities you could expect to make somewhere between $150,000 to $185,000. That's like a reasonable guess. And if you're doing more rural practice, you're going to clear $200,000 pretty regularly. The $300,000 number is extremely rare, but $185,000 is a good like rough estimate.
Okay. Wow. So, okay. I want to ask you about any roadblocks that you had along the way. This is something I always like to touch on in this podcast. For me, like I'm pretty open about, my roadblocks when I got to medical school. Like it did take me 2 years to get in and I got denied by 25 med schools. It was a hard process for me. I'm wondering if there was any roadblocks that you experienced along the way, to your path to becoming a CRNA.
I guess like one of my biggest roadblocks was just trying to figure out that that was really what I wanted to do, honestly. Mm-hmm. It was interesting. I got very lucky, but there was a lot of, here's the biggest roadblock for any person trying to become a CRNA. It's getting your first job in the intensive care unit. There are so many people who want ICU jobs for various reasons. It's very enticing for anyone who really loves critical thinking and a challenge. It's kind of like I don't want to say the highest level of learning, because every kind of nursing brings about different types of learning, but it's the most in-depth learning that you'll get in a hospital is working in an intensive care unit. And you have very close teamwork, and you only have one or two patients depending on what's going on with them. And you have the most autonomy that you will as a nurse, which is really different than in other settings where you're kind of like waiting on the doctor's orders. In the ICU, a lot of the times they're asking you. You really feel like a team. You really feel like equals, which is a really amazing experience. But getting in there is really tough for that reason. Mm-hmm. And so many people do use it as experience for school. So I had to apply when I got out of nursing school to like a million jobs. And I wasn't just applying to ICUs. I applied to every job I saw a posting for in Philadelphia. I must have applied to like 30 jobs. Wow. I think I applied to 10 in DC, at least 20 something in New York, because that's where I'm from. I applied to jobs in Harrisburg. I was ready to go anywhere, just to get any job I could. The market was saturated. I got really lucky. I was babysitting for a surgical resident, and he happened to be like a friend of a friend. Mm-hmm. And he gave my resume to the manager of my unit.
Wow.
And she interviewed. I know.
So. Serendipity again. That's awesome.
100 applications later. So that was probably my biggest hurdle.
Okay.
I would say.
Cool. All right, let's get into social media. This is something I always like to touch on towards the end of the podcast, because that's how I met you and that's how I meet everyone on this show. I saw you on TikTok first. So why did you start on TikTok? When did you start and why did you start on TikTok?
It's really funny. So I got into vegan cooking like maybe 2 years ago, I want to say. And I know this sounds roundabout, but this is what led me to TikTok. So my vegan cooking, I really wanted a place to put my recipes and to share it with family and friends. So mm-hmm. I was like, oh, I'll start a cooking Instagram account. I called it Chrissy Goes Hippie. Mm-hmm. And I posted my vegan recipes and I started a food blog. And then I decided, I'm going to share my recipes on TikTok because it's a great way to reach people. And at the time, it just didn't really take off too much. I had like a couple videos and I was like, I don't know, like it's kind of hard to do recipes on TikTok. There are people who do it really well. I'm just not one of them. And I saw this trend, the eyes, lips, face trend. Do you remember that trend?
Of course. Yeah.
Eyes, lips, face. And it reminded me of anesthesia. It reminded me of like kids waking up from anesthesia. So I made this video about kids waking up from anesthesia. They're wild, spoiler alert. And it was completely insane. Like it just blew up. It just became so viral. So yeah, and I instantly got all these followers and people were asking all these questions about anesthesia. And it was nuts. So then I didn't even know that there was healthcare professionals on TikTok. I had no idea at the time. And then, yeah, so I just kept making videos. And then all of a sudden, my For You page changed. And I was like, oh, there's all these doctors on.
Wow. That's interesting. So, yeah, it's cool. That's the thing about TikTok. It really takes one video, and all of a sudden, you know, there's hundreds of people coming. I'm sure you get DMs all the time, probably every day, asking about
every
what?
Day.
Like, asking you to mentor them, in a sense, asking you questions about CRNA. Is that true?
Yeah. And you know what? I'm so happy to do it. And I even have that in my bio, DM for questions anytime, because I did not have someone to go to. Mm-hmm. People in my family are not really in medicine. I have a cousin who's a PA. I have a nurse aunt nurse. Mm-hmm. And other than that, I mean, they don't know anything about nurse anesthesia. And I had no one to go to. Nursing schools are typically very unhelpful with this because they're almost never from the anesthesia world. So your advisors don't really know what to tell you. Mm-hmm. It's like this weird little world that's so hard to chip into. So, I'm really happy to answer questions and help people because I just had just struggled so hard to get that help.
Love that. And that's a huge reason why I got on these platforms too. So for any of you guys that are listening that are interested in learning more about becoming a CRNA, Chrissy is your girl. Check her out at Chrissy CRNA on TikTok and at Chrissy Goes Hippie on.
I changed it to Chrissy CRNA also to just make it easier, but don't worry. There's still recipes. Don't worry.
Love it. Yeah. So you do both. You do vegan recipes, but then you also do CRNA and sort of, you do a little bit of everything. I love it. You do a little bit of mental health too.
You know what? It's all about health promotion at the end of the day. It sounds like there's such different topics, but I realized recently it's all one passion, right? I'm passionate about health and health promotion. I want our community to be healthy. I want people's spirit and just soul to be happy and healthy. Mm-hmm. I want your body to be healthy. That's where the plant-based cooking comes in. In anesthesia, we see so many diseases and complications, and so much of it can be prevented with health and wellness. And mm-hmm. it's something that I'm reminded of every single day. So, you know, health promotion is where it's at.
Yes. Okay. Last question for you. If you go back in time, would you choose CRNA again? And what would you do differently? What is something that you would change?
I don't know. It's such a great question. I mean, part of me still thinks, like, I'll just be very honest. Part of me still thinks like, wow, like what if I did just go to med school in the first place, like my original plan, I think I would have been really happy. I think I would have been equally happy because I really think that's my calling and my talent and what I meant to do. But as a nurse anesthetist, I really love my job. I'm very fulfilled. I really love giving anesthesia. I love the team I work with. I love the physician anesthesiologists I work with. I love the surgeons I work with. I love my patients. I don't know. I mean, I'm fulfilled. So I think that honestly, it's a coin toss and mm-hmm. either way, I would be completely happy. So I don't know if I would change it. I'm glad that I ended up where I did. Did I need to do all those extra degrees and do it in a roundabout way? I don't know. But I'm glad I'm doing this now.
Okay, that was refreshing. I love when people say like, you know, maybe I would have been happy doing this, but I'm also happy doing this. I love that. Thank you so much for sharing all of your knowledge with us. And I learned a ton today. I seriously am going to walk away from this conversation. I know the history. I'm talking 1920s.
Oh gosh. 1927 was Ralph Waters and the first physician residency. I think 1919 was the first nurse anesthesia school, but I'm not entirely sure. I have a TikTok about it. You can fact check me on there.
Chrissy is a history buff. All right, Chrissy, thank you so much for coming to the show. We are going to jump on Instagram Live and chat with everybody. But seriously, I just want to thank you so much for coming. It was great to meet you, and I can't wait for this to air.
Yeah, you too, Jake. Bye, everyone.
Bye. What's up, guys? Just as a reminder, today's episode was sponsored by Dr. Josie, or Write Your Acceptance on Instagram. She's a personal statement coach with over 10 years of experience working with students on medical, dental, and residency personal statements. So if you are writing your personal statement or your secondary essays, shoot her a DM on Instagram at Write Your Acceptance. That's Write, W-R-I-T-E, Your Acceptance. Tell her I sent you her way. Thank you for listening to today's episode of Destination Healthcare. If you made it this far, then hopefully you enjoyed it. If you haven't already, please consider clicking that subscribe button. If you particularly enjoyed today's episode, I'd love to receive a rating and a review from you. Unless you hated it, then maybe don't do that at all. See you guys next week.